Hey, sports fans, did you know there is a convention just for you? Just like all the geeks have Comic-Con, now you have SportsCon. Be there July 13th and meet fantasy superstars like Melvin Gordon, Zeke Elliott, and Patty Mahomes. These are just a few of the hundreds of players and personalities at the SportsCon this year. Not to mention your favorite people ever, Sleeper Wire and Eat Sleep Fantasy Podcast will be hosting the official fantasy draft party of SportsCon. We've got live drafts, draft boards provided by Draft Party USA. We've got raffles for signed jerseys courtesy of Prestige Sports Memorabilia, dinner, drinks, trivia, and much more. Tickets are limited, so get them now. When they're gone, you're going to wish you had one. Join us July 13th at Top Golf in Dallas for the best after party of SportsCon. Check out draftnightout.com for more info.
Welcome to the Sleeper Wire Show. I'm your host, Jason. Tonight with me is Prophet Hoos. Say hi, Prophet Hoos.
Hi. Hello.
A little more energy for the show, for our guests, for our other hosts. Give us a little more than hello.
I am very pleased to be on with you, Jason. Thanks for having me on. This is a treat for me to be on the Sleeper Wire Show.
The other Sleeper Wire member we have on tonight is Showtime George. I promised I'd never call him Showtime because he nicknamed himself Showtime. But you know what? It's a special night with a special guest. So, Showtime, what's going on, bud?
Not much. Just excited to be on the Sleeper Wire Show. It's a pleasure to be here.
And our special guest tonight, a member of the Quant Edge, the Gridiron Experts, co-author of the Fantasy Football Black Book, it's none other than Derek Brown. Derek, how's it going?
What's going on, guys? I'm ready to chop it up and talk some football tonight.
Let's do it.
For those of you that weren't privy to the 35 minutes of show we've done before the show, I'm honestly already exhausted between the three of these guys. On tonight's show, couple weeks ago did a industry superflex mock draft. We're going to get into where the industry experts picked. You know what we're going to do? We're going to talk shit about the guys who picked.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean
listen.
I clearly invited them all together so I can rip them to shreds on this fine show. And I invited Pedro along so, you know, he can see witness. And he's here just to tell the story.
All about it, man.
So, yeah.
All right. So before we get into that, we're going to jump into a little bit of news. Not a lot of news, a whole lot of coach speak, a whole lot of maybes and possiblys. And so the first thing we're going to talk about is Anthony Miller being expected ready for camp.
Love it. Love Anthony Miller.
Love it.
So where do you have Anthony Miller this year?
Probably too high, but that's just me right now. I have him at 31. I think he has a good shot at cracking a wide receiver, too. I think he's our best wide receiver. I'm not a fan of Allen Robinson. I think he's talented, but I'm not a fan of him in that offense. They don't seem to like him much. I don't know. I don't think much is different going to happen year two. He's the only guy that they like there, it seems. You know, him and Tariq Cohen. Everybody else just gets whatever else. So we'll see if things change.
Yeah, you kind of jumped into my next question, and I was going to ask Derek, do you have Anthony Miller above or below Anthony Robinson?
You mean Allen Robinson?
Allen Robinson, I'm sorry.
I have Allen Robinson above Anthony Miller.
Is it close?
In that range, probably by end of the season. But, I mean, I have Allen Robinson right now as my wide receiver 29, and Anthony Miller is creeping in at wide receiver. He fluctuates anywhere from wide receiver 36 to 40 for me.
So you're not
Yeah,
you're not that far off. You're just a lot higher on Allen Robinson than Hoos is.
Right.
I just think the scoring's very tight when you drop below that 24 in those wide receiver three categories. And I don't see the Bears like just immensely targeting any one wide receiver because Trubisky's better when he spreads the ball.
So you see both of their wide receivers as solid wide receiver threes, though.
Pretty much. I mean, unless Allen Robinson just outplays my expectations and gets into that 10 touchdown range, then he could sneak in as a wide receiver two for me. But past that, I don't see it. I think they're better viewed as wide receiver threes.
Yeah, I was gonna say Allen Robinson's not getting 10 touchdowns next year. That's just not gonna happen.
No, I don't disagree.
Not happening. No, I have Anthony Miller at 37, so I'm a little higher on him, lower on him rather than Hoos. I'm a little bit higher on him, I guess, than Derek. But he's definitely a wide receiver three, cusp, wide receiver four for me.
So we're not that far off from him at all. I mean, like Derek was alluding to, all of these guys, we're talking about a point average different, like 1 point, 2 points possibly. It's probably too much, you know, at that point and that wide receiver three range, which is nice. I mean, wide receiver three, you're using that guy as your flex or your wide receiver three that you have to start. So, I mean, we like these guys. Obviously, I have Allen Robinson at like 41, and I wanted to move him higher. I don't know. I don't feel like I can until I see something more, some continuity from the offense. I just don't see it. I haven't seen it last year. And the quarterback had some monster games. Allen Robinson was not a part of that.
He was in the playoffs, baby. He had a monster game in the playoffs.
He did. So I'd like to see more of that. I don't want to say I've been burned about end of season, how guys perform, and then going into the following season. I was very high on Keelan Cole last year. I had this nice stat that I was touting around that he was the second wide receiver. He was the second best wide receiver in fantasy from weeks 13 to 16 or 17 or something, which is true, which is crazy. And then he just was not. Bortles happened, I suppose. But he's got a better guy this year. But, yeah, that's why I kind of try not to look too much at the end of the year. But obviously, yeah, we do got to take it into effect. I'd like to see it more from Allen Robinson because I do like the talent.
So the next bit of news we have is Rashard Matthews to the Saints. George?
That's big news. If you're a Rashard Matthews owner in Dynasty, you absolutely love that. I don't think there's a better place for him to go right now. That he probably becomes their wide receiver two on that team by the end of the year, I think, across from Michael Thomas.
Does that help or hurt Traquan Smith?
I think it hurts Traquan Smith a little bit, to be honest.
My thought there initially is being the third guy in that offense is not necessarily a bad thing playing against weaker corners.
All right, I'll say this. Rashard Matthews, he just got signed by a tryout, so it's got to tell you what they think about him. I mean, their wide receiver depth chart's already pretty solid. He's brought in his depth right now. If he doesn't perform, could I see him easily get cut? Yes. Do I think that there's a path to him to be the wide receiver two there? Possibly, but that's going to take two things for me. One, again, to miss time again, and it's going to take Traquan Smith to not take that second-year leap for me. In that, because you also have Jared Cook there, so even the wide receiver two there, it's going to be a muddled mess because the wide receiver two there is going to be, I mean, at best, what, third, fourth for targets in that offense, which has been more run-heavy. So I like it if you're a dynasty owner, and if injuries happen, could he be a top 24 wide receiver in a week? I mean, yeah, that's fine. And Drew Brees, we've seen support two top 36 wide receivers in numerous seasons. I don't have the stat in front of me, but he's done it a crap ton in his career. But with this offense leaning more to the run in the last 2 years, I think that it's going to be very similar coming into this year. I like Matthews, and I think that if he's on a waiver wire, if you're in a deep dynasty, yeah, pick him up. I mean, obviously, or it just breathed life and try to trade him for something like a 2023rd or fourth or whatever you can get for him, because after this year, he's probably dust again. But I'm not, I guess I'm not at, like, over the moon for it. I see a path, but it's going to take some stuff to happen and some injuries to happen for him to assume that role. And even in that role, and it's someone in question for me.
Yeah, I'm a huge Rishard Matthews fan. I remember back when he was on the Dolphins, and he just outperformed what a lot of people thought he would do. And then he moved on and kind of didn't have as much of a opportunity on the Titans. I don't know what the Titans were doing there.
They got thrown up in those contract negotiations, and I mean, apparently shit got ugly, like blood was in the water, because and everything I said, you're talking to one of the biggest Rishard Matthews lovers everywhere. Like, I put out a Dynasty article last year talking about him as being like an ugly duckling, like you got to pick this dude up and he could be a top 24 wide receiver.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I've anybody that listens to Sleeper Wire show knows I've been calling him an elite talent for years. I think he has an elite talent. He just doesn't, for whatever reason, he probably shows up late. Or I mean, if you've ever coached anything, whether little league or whatever, you want players that have accountability, play hard. He obviously probably doesn't have these attributes, and why he gets moved on, because he has the talent. When you watch the guy, you watch his tape, he's super talented, but he doesn't seem to stick around. He should have found a team last year, but he's obviously got issues. He got paid some money. Anytime you get paid, you're going to feel a little bit even more prima donna-ish. So, I mean, he's getting older. He's got to get his stuff together. He fell in the perfect situation, I think. Definitely affects Traquan. If Ted Ginn's, 34 years old? He's going to miss time based off of him being old. He's amazing when he's healthy. I mean, he helped you in a fantasy, if you flexed him out, he helped you last year in the fantasy playoffs. A Traquan, I don't know, he's still got some learning to do. We've seen young receivers not kind of get it together yet, and I think Rishard Matthews has that veteranship. He's, yeah, he practice squad, he's got to work his way up, but this is a perfect situation for him. I love this news. This was probably by far my favorite bit of fantasy news in this offseason. We haven't had a ton of it, but this was huge to me. I'm hoping to see it come to fruition, but yeah, I got my fingers crossed it actually happened. I'm not going to be telling you guys go out there and draft them high, but definitely take them and redraft off of waivers. He should be there. Last round pick, he should be there. Yeah, I think he could provide great value for you, definitely.
It's funny you said this was your favorite piece of fantasy news, because when we were going over what news we were going to talk about before the show, this next little bit was the one where I got the most hoots and hollers. So the next piece of news is that Theo Riddick is on the roster bubble and Kerryon is expected to get 60 catches. And nobody can see this, but Derek in an audio podcast is dancing with his arms straight up in the air. Derek, I have to go to you first before you burst. What do you think about this news?
I'm conducting the Kerryon Johnson hype train, baby. It's all on. Like, I love this dude. If for Theo Riddick to possibly be on the bubble, and then so I tweeted this morning, and I was like, this has to say to what the Lions possibly think about Johnson's pass catching ability. And then it comes right out after that, this part of news, and it's like, oh, he could catch 60 balls. And I was like, man, it's exactly what I was thinking. Like, the guy in limited opportunity last year because he was injured towards the end of the year, he came out and talked about himself as not being a well-rounded back. And part of that is everybody wants to quote that shit. And I hate that, honestly, because that's a rookie sitting here having humility and trying to know his place coming into the league. Kerryon Johnson balled out last year. When that dude was given a chance, given the volume, he was amazing. And he was amazing in the pass game last year. So looking at this, like, everybody wants to talk about like Patricia and all that stuff coming out about they're going to limit his volume and stuff like that. Well, that's fine. I hope they don't run him into the ground and make him have 300 carries. that sure as hell is fine by me. Like, give him 225 and give him the looks in the pass game, and I'll love that all day, all the way to like a top 12 to top 20, I mean, a top 15 running back finish. Like, that's absolutely within his outcome, his range of outcomes. At least on the low end, that dude is explosive when they put the ball in his hands, and it sounds like they're going to do that.
With this news, George, what do you think his ceiling is?
His ceiling? Oh, he could be a top 10 back if you're asking what his ceiling is. Anybody who says there's no way he can catch 60 passes next year, think about this. Theoretic last year caught 61. If he's not there and Kerryon Johnson getting all those passes, he's easily going to catch 60 passes. That's not even in question.
And Kerryon caught, what, 32 last year off the top of my head?
I think he had 33, but yeah, ballpark it, yeah. It's very close. So, but yeah, absolutely. If Theoretic's not there, yeah, you could probably pen him in for 60 catches. If you're a Kerryon owner, this is great news for you. If you're a Kerryon truther, this is great news.
Nobody's worried about Patricia?
No.
Why?
Well, I mean, one, he doesn't seem to be a decent coach. He was bad for that offense last year. He kept giving it to Blunt, which was obviously a much poorer talent than Kerryon Johnson.
Do you blame Patricia or do you blame the OC?
I probably blame both. I mean, you got to blame the head coach, right? Yeah, and then them going out and trying to sign Brown from the Rams. Now, they didn't end up getting him because the Rams matched the offer. I just worry a little bit that they worry about what Kerryon Johnson said last year. And to your point, Derek, do you think that maybe him saying that was because he heard it one too many times in the locker room from the coach? Hey, you're not a full-time back. We want to keep you limited. I want to slow the hype train down a little bit because we're in June. We're hearing a little bit of coach speak. We're hearing a little bit of, you know, a little bit of optimism about a guy who's insanely talented. But I worry, especially on the offseason where they showed that they didn't necessarily trust him 100% by trying to go out and get other talent, maybe they don't see him in this role.
I honestly think that that's just rookie speak. I think that's rookie, like, knowing his place and stuff like that, especially coming into the league with other pass-catching running backs around him. I mean, you look at him in college. Kerryon Johnson never caught more than 24 passes in a season in college. So it's not like this dude was just catching tons and tons of passes every single year in college. So is he going to come out and talk about how great he is in one of the hardest aspects to transition to the NFL as far as a running back goes in the pass game and that usage and pass blocking and protections and things of that nature? Nah, man. I mean, I'm fine with that. And I don't have it with me right now, but if you look back at PFF, their draft guide from the previous year when Kerryon came out, he was either middle of the road off the top of my head or near the top in pass blocking efficiency as far as like quarterback sacks and stuff that he allowed. So I think that was a dude trying to be humble, be honest. I've seen more proficiency out of him on the field. I mean, he had two or three games last year where he had more than like 7 or 8 targets in a game. That, to me, that's not a guy that they're scared to throw the ball to.
The next question coming out of that before we move on to another piece of news is, if Theo Reddick does get dropped, George, is there any place you can think of that he'd be fantasy relevant if they picked him up? Any good landing spots? I'll open it up to everybody. I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but what are your thoughts, George?
Well, I would say Tampa would probably be a good spot. But then again, you could say that for any half-decent running back, that Tampa would be a good spot for them. So
I would say Dallas with them moving on from Tavon Austin. Even I know they liked Tony Pollard. They took him high, and I think they took him to kind of use him in that Tavon Austin role, which is weird to say for on a fantasy show to bring up Tavon Austin because he's not very fantasy relative, but at the same time, he was used in a role. So I think could be a nice spot for him.
I think Carolina would be a good spot too, having him on the bench just in case something happens with McCaffrey. He can come in and provide this, not the same level of skill of McCaffrey, obviously, but that skill set of being able to catch the ball at the backfield, he provides that, and I think he'd be good there.
I'll give you a random one. I actually kind of like him landing in Miami. with the and I don't want to push the New England narrative too much, but if Drake takes more of that early down role and Ballage can catch passes, yes, but could Theo Riddick play a James White-esque role in South Beach? I could definitely see it.
Yep.
I love that. I love that take.
The next bit of news, we have James Conner expecting the Steelers to spread out the touches. Yeah, I know. Isn't something Mike Tomlin's known for?
This but... is, look. The buzz.
I want all this shit to keep coming out and bust James Conner's ADP. That way everybody can scoop him up and just be loving it and laughing and, in everybody's faces.
Oh my God, man, it's just,
his ADP has been going up bananas. And up. Let's try to push that back down a little bit.
I actually wish these guys would not be so humble. Who gives a crap about being humble, man? It's like people want, look, Rosen, one of the reasons why people like Josh Rosen is he came to the league with super swaggered out. Like, this is, you know, I'm the best guy in the, he obviously was. I was the best quarterback. And he still has this hype around him. A lot of people, they like the guy that has hype around him, and he's hyping himself up. You know, all of this.
Yeah, but look at all the hate that Baker's getting for you know, taking the reins and talking himself
Baker's
up.
Baker's Baker.
You know?
I mean, at the end of the day, Baker, he's a quarterback. That's a little bit.
It's just not how Conner is, man. Conner's work, man. Like,
it's crazier for a quarterback, I think, to be kind of so swaggerific. I'm the best, and. You know, it's nice, though, at the same time. I love Baker Mayfield. I think he's probably overrated in redraft. But in redraft, I think people
say, still my waking heart.
Nah, man, I can't pick him third overall. Like, that's just kind of crazy to me. Like, can he finish there? Sure. Am I drafting him there? No. Man, that's I'm not doing that. Like, why am I doing that with a guy's learning a brand new offense? Why?
It's the hype. Like, it's the hype. It's the Odell hype.
It's insane. Stop doing it, man. Like, don't tell all of these guys. We as a fantasy community tell people do not draft quarterback early. We didn't draft quarterback early in a super flex league we just did with all the industry professionals. I don't where did Baker go in that draft? Baker didn't go as high as a lot of people would take him. In a redraft, just standard league, you know, let alone a super flex.
Yeah, he went in the third round in that draft. Third quarterback off the board.
In one QB right now, per fantasy football calculator, Baker is going as the QB5 in the middle of the sixth in the 12-team league.
That's not terrible. But I've been seeing him go too early. And we're digressing. We're talking about Baker Mayfield here. As we were talking about James Conner, just
sorry, my bad. That's all me.
No, this is all me. I will take the blame every time for that because that's what I do. I like to segue into other players so we can cover the whole NFL, right? But no, I mean, this whole humble bit, it's not good. It wasn't good for Carry On. Was that the news right before this? Carry On, right? They're saying he expects the ball.
Well, that was my take. That was my take on it. Him not calling himself a three down back.
Exactly. This does not help. You know, big up yourself. Have your boys, you know, hyping you up and just whatever it is, man. I don't like this humble stuff among sports players.
Get some confidence in you.
Yeah, like you're playing sports. Like I need to believe in you. I want that. Baker Mayfield, I'm the best. That's why we all pick him. I mean, I don't, but that's why we all grab him so early in these drafts. And we see the weapons around him, and we're, oh my God, it's a great situation. They didn't improve the line so much, but no one cares about that. Nobody thinks about that. Everybody looks at the offensive pieces. Guy got to get the ball out of the pocket.
Speaking of hype for hype's sake, they're talking about Fournette to be a large part of the passing game. Nick Foles expects it. He expects to pass to the back a lot. What do you guys think about that? We got Carry On with 60. So if he's a large part, if Fournette's going to be a large part of the passing game, what do we got for Fournette?
I got him at about 30. If he's going to be a, quote, large part, I'm thinking 30 catches for Fournette. I don't think he's going to get much more than that.
Damn, that's like Jordan Howard territory right there.
Well, I can't trust him to stay on the
field.
That's
harsh. That's almost like large hate.
But he can't – listen, he can't catch the ball if he's not on the field.
I was going to say, more catches or ankle breaks?
Well, this is assuming he's healthy for, what, 12, 14 games, okay? I'm not going to say 16 because we don't know that's bullshit. So, let's be real. But
that's playing in that many games. That's not counting the games where he leaves in the second quarter because he pulled his hammy again.
All right, so in 8 games last year, he had 22 receptions. So, let's pace this out. So, over-under, you're obviously under 40. Over-under 40, where do the rest of y'all stand? Because I'm over 40. I'll easily say that. Like, I put in between 40 and 50.
I'll move it up to 35. You convinced me to go to 35.
How many games are you going at 40?
I'd say he'll play... Let me just hedge my own bet. I'll say he'll play 13 games.
That's a good clip. That's a good clip.
So you're saying like
13 games, that puts him at like 3 catches a game?
3 catches
a
game.
That's not like – is that undoable?
No, but is that a large part – I mean
– But I mean large part of a low-volume passing offense, that's still a decent amount.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say – Yeah, with Nick Foles at the helm, I'm going to say over if he plays 13 games.
Yeah,
over 40.
I'd give him over 40. The problem is he just doesn't have the history, right? And as analysts, that's what we look at. We want to buy the hype, right? Because we want to plug this guy in, and we don't have to plug in another. Who else are they using at as their secondary back there? They really haven't used one. I mean, they were using Yeldon last year. He's gone.
They drafted Armstead.
Yeah, I love Armstead, but I mean, do we think he has that role? I don't think so.
In the previous season, so like in 2017, he played 13 games. Like we're talking about the 14, he had 48 targets, 36 catches. So if he grows at all, 40 might be undershooting it too.
Yeah, I mean, he had 58 passes in 21 career games. That's not terrible at all. I mean, obviously he's. Hasn't been very healthy. If he stays on the field, like George was alluding to, that's the key, right? He's got to stay on the field. He stays on the field. I don't see why he can't catch more passes. It's not like they've added pieces at the wide receiver position. They actually lost pieces. Well, not pieces, but they've lost something there. So I don't see why he can't step in and be a piece of the offense. I wouldn't say he's going to catch 80 balls Kamara style. No. McCaffrey, 100 balls. No. Even Zeke, 60-something balls. No, I don't think so. 40, sure. That's not huge, though. That's good. That's Drake range. So,
what's a huge number, though? Like, if he gets above 50?
So, I think over 50 is probably a big number for Fournette.
Yeah, that's impressive. I wouldn't call it big, but that's impressive.
It's a step up from last year, and like you said, it's a big number for a low passing offense.
Right.
Not to go too far down narrative street, but with their new OC, DeFilippo there, they've used the running back in the pass game a shit ton in the past. I mean, you look at last year with Dalvin Cook, those Vikings running backs, you look back to the Eagles and stuff like that, all of the passes they slung to their running backs. I don't know, man. I don't see the wide receiver or anybody on that wide receiver depth chart. And yes, I like Didi, but still even Didi. Like, nobody there is commanding. Like, absolutely they have a bunch of guys.
Keelan Cole,
they have
baby.
A bunch of guys. Oh, man, I love Keelan. I love Keelan. But, this is what I'll say. They have a bunch of guys on that depth chart trying to be dudes.
Right.
And nobody there is just commanding targets.
Right.
So Fournette out of the backfield could be the guy to command some targets.
All right. So that looks like a good place to end the news. I think we're going to jump into our mock draft. Like I said earlier, Hoos put together an industry mock draft a couple weeks ago. Superflex. Hoos, since you conducted the mock draft, do you want to let everybody know who was a part of it?
So in this industry draft, we have the first pick. I'm a guy, Bill Latin, hard worker over there at Walmart, making sure everybody's doing their jobs, working 24 hours a day. You know, he's the manager over there, and he's a good fantasy player. Then at number two, I got Josh ADHD, the decent team. Andrew Erickson at number three. Matt Spencer, number four. Had Sam Lane, otherwise known as Stompy. He won this kind of important championship a year ago. It's called Scott Fish Bowl League. I'm not sure if you guys know about that. It's kind of, up and coming. We got Draft Genius next, Professor Chris, Dynasty John, Eric Moody, interesting team we'll get to, Tyler Gee, myself, and then we got Deep Row at the 12th turn, which made things difficult for me. So,
all right, guys. So I'm going to let you discuss these teams in depth. But the first thing that jumps out to me, the thing I'm going to start this the analysis of this draft off with, I've been in a handful of Superflex mock drafts. Within the first round, usually for me, I see at least two quarterbacks go off the board. In this mock draft, the first quarterback, Pat Mahomes, doesn't go off the board till 211. What is going on with quarterbacks in a Superflex mock? Did you just forget to tell everybody it was a Superflex?
I told everyone it was a Superflex. I think what happened here is what you won't see in any draft you're ever in. This is an industry draft. As industry guys, we take pride into drafting quarterbacks late. It's almost kind of like a badge of honor. Like, I got the, a starting quarterback round 14, 15, and 16. Meanwhile, yeah, got James Conner, Dalvin Cook, and Lev Bell in the first three picks, the first three rounds or something like that. And we're laughing at you because you grabbed them early. So I think that's kind of what happened here. You just see industry guys waiting and waiting and waiting. That kind of happened with Todd Gurley, who was I expecting to fall. But we have a guy in the sleeper wire who was very, very high on him, and none of this offseason news affects him at all, which we'll get to that. So Todd Gurley went in a surprising spot, I think, for most listeners. Other than that, I don't think the Superflex round two at the 11 pick was too crazy, just based off of it being an industry draft.
I mean, I don't disagree. You definitely see quarterbacks go a little bit later in industry mocks than you do in any other kind of format. And honestly, I think that's the way that – I mean, I know that home leagues are different, but if you're playing in Superflex, this is probably not your generalized home league. You're probably in there with a bunch of people that are into football and on the cutting edge, because Superflex is the way it's going, baby. So for me, if you're going to wait and those quarterbacks are going to fall, that's honestly the way that you need to approach it. So I like it. I mean, I feel like that's the way that people need to look at it, because – you can mix and match, man, especially even in a 12-team league. Shit, man. You can wait late and still get three quarterbacks and just play the matchups all day.
All right, so other than the fact that no quarterbacks went in the first, what is the big surprise? Now, if you want me to, I can read off. We had Saquon Barkley 1, Christian McCaffrey 2, Alvin Kamara 3, Ezekiel Elliott 4, DeAndre Hopkins 5, Todd Gurley 6, Melvin Gordon 7, Odell Beckham Jr. 8, Michael Thomas 9, David Johnson 10, James Conner 11, and Joe Mixon at 12. What are your big surprises there?
It's got to be Gurley going 1-6. Who alluded to that earlier? Draft Genius is a huge fan of Todd Gurley. All this offseason news and noise has not affected this man at all. He still thinks Todd Gurley is the number one running back in the league. And so for him to get his guy at 6, that's what happened.
Yep.
I will say I adamantly disagree with that. So
expand, please.
I will say that I'm buying a lot of the Gurley fear. And it's not because of everything. It's because of what happened last year. It's not because of all the coach speak and all this other kind of crap, because we really haven't gotten any other new news besides the non-news we got last year. It's basically, if he does have an arthritic knee, that can get better by rest. But once he starts playing and the workload gets there, how much is too much? And there is no great answer, even if they talk about limiting his touches. There's no specific number, 15 touches per game until it flares. Well, that could be week 4, that could be week 7. And we already have a sample size of what the hell that looks like. And that is him missing time. And they already added running backs to that room. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's not a when Gurley misses time. It's an if. It's not an if. It's a win. Excuse me. Yeah, no, it's a win. And it's just a question of how many games does he play before the knee flares? And when it flares, how bad is it?
Because how many carries do you give him on the season?
It depends on how many games he plays. And that's not a question that I can honestly answer for
anybody. You're the coach. You're the coach. You believe he has this arthritic knee. He's taking time off the whole year.
Am I the same coach that talked about his knee being totally fine the whole time? And then we saw him not even be used in the Super Bowl, the biggest game ever?
Yes, okay. You are that coach. Now, you're going into the season. It's the end of the season now. How many carries did you give Todd Gurley?
If his volume is capped, and if his volume is limited in the sense of like what he's going to see per game, because we saw whenever he was limited in snaps, the pass game role dried up. Like, that dried up like the freaking Sahara Desert. So if that dries up like the Sahara Desert and you have Cooper Kupp coming back, so you have other pass game weapons there, then what are you banking on for Todd Gurley to be that, like, I mean, he was drafted here as the, the sixth pick overall, the RB5. For him to make it to RB5, if the volume is limited and the pass game role dries up, because we've seen that whenever his knee was a problem, what's he going to make it there on? Touchdowns? That's it.
My thing is for Gurley, I actually don't expect him to get 225 carries. I think that's.
I don't either.
I don't either.
I think I'm being generous with that.
About 190. And 190 is fine. Yeah, Kamara saw 194. He had 14 touchdowns. So I don't think that touchdown rate is going to drop crazy. He's not going to get 17. Can he get 12? Yeah. I see him getting 12. I think in touchdown position, if the opportunity or a touchdown is going to occur, you're going to put the guy that scored 17 touchdowns last year for your offense, regardless of whatever you're thinking is going to happen there. 194 attempts with Kamara. So, okay, he caught a ton of balls. So I'm giving Gurley more passing work. I still see him finishing as a top 10 back. I don't have him top 6. I mean, sorry, top 5. But I can see him finishing top 5, and I don't really – yes, that is the biggest surprise in round one so far, just based off of rehashing of news. Can we get clear on that? Like, this has not been new news. This is news that's just been recirculated. This is not like the team – if anything, the most recent news is the team saying – granted, they said he was fine on those championship games – is the team saying he's fine, they're resting him, and he's going to be fine by the time the games start. So I don't really understand why we're that low on him and we're willing to – I've been seeing people saying they will not touch Todd Gurley.
Like, listen, if I'm a Todd Gurley owner in any Dynasty League, I'm selling.
I'm there.
We've already seen the peak. We've already seen Todd Gurley peak. He's never going to perform again like he did in his record-breaking season. That's just not happening.
I also think if you sell him now, you're going to get pennies on the dollar. So what you have to do is wait until his knee's okay the first week he has a big game and you sell him after that. And it's a gamble because you don't know that his knee's going to be okay the first game and you don't know that he's going to get the workload the first game. But you can't sell him now. Right now is low value. Like if you sell him now, you're getting a what is it?
Who's Deion Lewis? If I could get a Kerryon Johnson and a 2020 first for him, I'm selling it all day long.
And you probably can.
Yep, you absolutely probably could.
I know we'll go back and forth on Gurley forever until we see it. We won't know. So what we're going to do now is we're going to move into the second round where Dalvin Cook went 2-1, Davante Adams 2-2, Le'Veon Bell 2-3, Julio Jones 2-4. Juju 2-5, Travis Kelce 2-6, Nick Chubb 2-7, Antonio Brown 2-8, Damian Williams 2-9, Mike Evans 2-10, and then finally Patrick Mahomes and Andrew Luck end the second round. So in that round, I guess the first thing that stands out to me is seeing Davante Adams drop into the second round when guys like Odell went when somebody like Odell went 1-8, what are your thoughts on Devontae dropping in the second?
I'm part of the problem with that. And honestly, I thought about taking Devontae and going wide receiver here. The only reason that I can't speak for anybody that didn't take Devontae before me, but for me on the turn, I felt like I needed to lock up that running back spot, considering like as many spots and the wide receivers that I like in those later, I say later, but like in the second or third to fifth round range, the wide receivers that I like there, I was more comfortable than that than passing up on workhorse running backs at that point. But
it towards the back half of that second round, if you're not locking up running back, it's 24 more picks till you get to pick again. So a lot of the really good, there's a decent tier break before you get to pick running back again. So I get taking a Joe Mixon and a Dalvin Cook. I'm a little more interested in guys like James Conner.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I was going to pick Devontae Adams over James Conner, but I had a feeling I'd get sniped, and I wasn't.
You would have.
Yeah. So
you would have. I was eyeing Conner right there, and you grabbed him, and I was like, yeah, shit.
I just knew there was no chance I was going to get both of those players. Devontae Adams, I expected to get sniped for sure, but that didn't happen, actually. And James Conner, the same thing. I expected both of those guys to get sniped. I wanted one of them. I had to have one of those guys. I'm not as high on Dalvin Cook, mainly because of those injury issues, the soft tissue. And I haven't seen him finish yet. I mean, we've seen him. A lot of people drafted him high last year or maybe got him cheaper because he wasn't expected to be ready. Held on to him, traded a lot for him, and he didn't really do much until the end of the season. So I want to see a guy do something before I'm just going to anoint them as such a high round pick. I'd like the pick there because I'd love to get a Joe Mixon and a Dalvin. If you're ever able to grab two stud running backs, I like what D-Bro did there, but I needed to have Devontae Adams. I'm mainly a wide receiver guy. So just me grabbing James Conner, which I'm very, very, very high on James Conner. I have him in my top five. I needed to have both of those guys. So if it makes you feel any better, I could have taken Devontae Adams at the 11th pick in Conner, but I guess I wasn't going to get Conner because I would have got sniped.
The next guy there, Julio Jones at 2-4. So you had two what I consider the top tier wide receivers drop to the second round.
That's crazy. I actually was going to grab Julio in the first round and miss out on James Conner and then grab Devontae Adams if I was going to miss out on James Conner. But I just felt it was important to get a running back, a top end running back. I was thinking hybrid zero RB, even though I ended up grabbing more running backs than I expected. They just fell in that range. But yeah, I was happy with it, with the outcome at the end of the day. Julio, yeah, I would have loved to have him. He fell at 2.4, which is insane. That should never happen.
So the one pick in the second round that surprises me is Damian Williams at 2.9. Typically, I've been seeing him go in the third round. So for him to come up into the second round in this draft is a little surprising.
Looking at the running backs that went after Damian Williams, so you got Damian Williams at 2.9. Next running back off the board is Devontae Freeman at 3.5, Leonard Fournette at 3.8, Kerryon Johnson all the way down at 4.5, Marlon Mack at 4.6. Is Damian Williams a cut above those guys where he should go two rounds ahead of, let's say, Marlon Mack, Kerryon Johnson, a round ahead of Leonard Fournette, Devontae Freeman? Is that about right for him?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, Damian Williams was drafted as the RB13. I think that's taking him RB12, RB13, somewhere in that range is taking him at probably where I think the median part of his outcomes is right now. So I don't hate it because I think that we've seen what the Chiefs running back situation can do. And it's very, very conducive, especially, I mean, he's going to get fed if there's no Tyreek there. But I don't hate the pick. I will say I'm not crazy surprised. Now personally, I would rather the value on a Marlon Mack or Kerryon versus Damian, but a guy that has the realm of his outcomes, Damian could easily, if he's the dude there for Kansas City, if he is the dude and you drafted him as RB13, he does have top five upside. Like, it is legit. Like, if he's the guy in that offense for the entire year, it's within the range of outcomes for him.
Yeah, I agree. And I think 13 is about the right spot for him. I wouldn't take – I take him over Devontae Freeman. I take him over Leonard Fournette at this point. So, and those were the next two to go off the board. So I think that's about the right spot for him. It's just it's early considering Mike Evans is there and considering it's super flex. So all the quarterbacks were there. I think that might be why to me it seems like it's a little early. All right, so if nobody has anything else on round two, we'll move on to round three. And I think what we'll do is we'll go through five rounds this way. And then what I want to ask is if anything after round five surprised you guys, and if anything, if you guys like a particular team and dislike a particular team, and we'll close it up after that. So we'll jump into round three. So with round three, we have Zach Ertz, Baker Mayfield, Aaron Rodgers, George Kittle, Devontae Freeman, Adam Thielen, T.Y. Hilton, Leonard Fournette, Stephon Diggs, Keenan Allen, A.J. Green, and Amari Cooper. So anything in round three stand out to you guys?
Those third round wide receivers, as Derek alluded to earlier, Thielen, Hilton, Diggs, Keenan Allen, A.J. Green, Amari Cooper, love them all. I'll take any of them on any of my teams.
Yeah, potentially all second rounders or much, much earlier into the third round. Fournette, yeah, he fell. I would have liked Fournette closer to the Damian Williams, but I guess it's in terms of running back, he only two running backs later, so not that bad there. Other than that, Mayfield, Little Rodgers, you know, this is not a dynasty league. This is a redraft league. I do not see Baker Mayfield finishing ahead of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I have Aaron Rodgers above Mayfield right now.
So the other thing I'm looking at here is a couple of the guys, Derek and Tyler Gee, DLF, went running back in the back of the draft. Tyler ended up with Keenan Allen, and Derek ended up with Amari Cooper as their wide receiver one. So it seems like running back went paid off for those guys, because Keenan Allen and Amari Cooper, both in their positions, could be solid wide receiver ones this year. So getting two stud running backs and then coming back and getting a wide receiver one, it looks like that paid off at the back end of the draft.
And that's kind of what I hope for, at least in a lot of my redrafts. I will, this is redraft focused, I will go running back usually in the first two rounds. And then 3 to 5, I want to grab at least some combination of three running backs or three wide receivers out of those 3 to 5, depending on who is there and what's going on in the draft. And I mean, you got to be flexible, but I want to get my two workhorses. And I feel like I said earlier, like I think wide receiver is a spot that you can mine value, and getting Amari Cooper as the wide receiver 14 that was drafted as a guy that I think is a wide receiver one. I mean, you look at all the wide receiver ones last year, each one of them had at least 130 targets. Amari Cooper was on pace with the Cowboys for 135 targets over an entire season. So I think he's a locked in wide receiver one. So to get him at the third round, I mean, lock me in. I'm down with it. And then I had to take my boy in the fourth round with Kenny Golladay, because I mean, if you're not down with Kenny G, I don't know what you do with your life.
You're doing it wrong.
We're sneaking into the fourth, but before we get out of the third, one other thing in this round, we had two of the tight ends go. Travis Kelce went in the second, and then we had Ertz and Kittle go in the third. You guys like those values there? I'm a fan, if you can, of grabbing one of those three early, because it gives you such positional value over the other players in this draft, the other tight ends basically on the board. But do you guys buy into that as well?
I got a top two. I don't have a top three. Like, I have a solid top two, and after that, we can debate all day for a 5-hour show on who's
after. Who's your top two?
Top
Kelce
two
and who?
It's Kelce and Ertz. But right after that is not Jordan. It's Hunter Henry. So I'm not. I don't like having to pay for George Kittle in the third round when he hasn't really shown all of that those yardage and all of those monster numbers with Jimmy G. He didn't show all of that with that. He showed it with Mullins kid, who was really good in his own respect. But it's a different quarterback there. A lot of us want to believe that Jimmy G, oh, Tom Brady, Gronkowski. No, it's not there. It's not the same quarterback. He doesn't have the same. He seems to throw to his outside guys more. You know, where Tom Brady throws to the middle. He throws to Gronk. Most young quarterbacks, they like to favor the tight end. So Jimmy G, yeah, he's a young quarterback, but didn't seem like he was targeting George Kittle as much as everyone seemed to be targeting him in the third round. So I don't really like that there. I love where going back to Cooper really quickly. I love that DeBro was able to get Cooper. But I think that's largely because we were in a super flex. So yeah. I don't think you get them if we're not in a super flex. And you probably end up with Kenny G as your wide receiver one, and then maybe you get like
a Cooper Kupp or an Edelman.
Yeah, if you get Kupp, that's amazing too. Who I'm very high on. I have him basically, cusping a wide receiver one. So he's right there. That's good value for as late as he won, which we'll get into.
All right. So in the fourth round, it looks like in the fourth round, we end up with four quarterbacks taken. It starts with Kenny Galladay, then Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Brandon Cooks, Kerryon Johnson, Marlon Mack, Jared Goff, Derrick Henry, Matt Ryan, Josh Jacobs, Robert Woods, and Aaron Jones. George, anything there that you see that you like, you didn't like? Anything stand out?
I was thinking maybe Josh Jacobs went a little early at the 410, especially being it's a super flex. That means he got pushed back in the draft. There was seven or eight quarterbacks taken at that point. So if you move him up eight spots, now he's going at the 4-2. I think that's way too early for him. But then I look to see who came after him. Aaron Jones, Sonny Michel, Geis, Philip Lindsay, Montgomery. I guess that's about the right spot for him.
Well, and then with his team's makeup, he has Kamara, Mike Evans, Aaron Rodgers. At that point, he's probably itching to get either a running back or a wide receiver. Josh Jacobs there is a guy who we all think is going to get the bulk of the workload for his team. And a lot of the guys after him are timeshares. So yeah, Josh Jacobs
I just don't know how Oakland's going to mesh just because they have so many new parts. The quarterback has been there, Derek Carr, but they bring in Antonio Brown. They bring in Tyrell Williams. They draft Josh Jacobs. I mean, these guys, are talented, but how do they mesh together? And because we haven't seen it, and there's so many new parts. And then you throw in the added fact that John Gruden is head coach. It literally could be a circus there this year, and that would not surprise me at all.
Where do you got Josh Jacobs in your rankings right now?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I have him at...
Off the top of his head.
Running back 19.
Off the top of your head, D-Bro, where do you have him?
I won't tell you off the top of my head. I'll tell you straight up on my forehead. I have him at RB 19 right now.
Wow. So
look at that.
I got in there because the fact of it is that I like him for the workload. Right. I don't know if the touchdown equity is going to be there for him to go higher. And I do have concerns about the offensive line, but I think that the volume is going to be there. Now, can he hold up to it? We don't know. We've never seen this dude get a lot of touches. But is he going to get the chance to get 200-plus carries? I think so.
Well, and it's funny, you both said 19, and here on the board, he comes off at 19. So right about where
I'm fine with it. I was going to say my whole part about it is I'm fine with it because at the running backs after him, I think besides my boy that I grabbed later, I'm a little bit scared about their stranglehold on the position. Like, we all love Aaron Jones, but do we know that like he is going to get the lion's share of the carries there? Hell no. We saw what LaFleur did last year. Like
Williams, baby.
I don't know that he's definitively going to – nah, Dexter Williams, son.
I think Dexter Williams later, but Jamal Williams I think is going to spoil people as far as the Aaron Jones, I feel like
I'm worried about Aaron Jones more than probably the consensus. So, I mean, I think Josh Jacobs is probably the last guy in that tier that you can kind of pencil in as having a good, like legit chance to be just the dude and nobody else.
And it's completely funny because if you look at, well, I'm going to guess, say you look at a lot of rankings, because I don't check out like a bunch of people's rankings. Everyone has him kind of in that RB2 range. I even have him at 23. I just felt like I had to put him there. Like, I'd be crazy not to put him in RB2 range. So it's kind of, it feels very arbitrary, especially with Jalen Richard still there, especially all the points that George alluded to. Like, those, that's, he could bust. He could completely bust. And we're just giving him that just based off of what he could possibly do, his talent level and what he should be able to do. But we have no clue at this point, and we just kind of throw this rookie back there. So I think it's going to be interesting to see, and it's kind of funny at the same time, I thought.
Yeah, maybe it's just because I like the guy a lot, but I think I would have much rather have had Darius Geis over Josh Jacobs. And Geis was drafted in this one, you know, significantly later in the draft.
I worry about Geis more than Jacobs, like way more than Jacobs, George. We differ on that, man.
Yeah, listen, I like Geis. I like Geis as a talent, but I, you know, you worry about his injury. So we will get to Geis because we're rolling in around five right now. And 5-1 is Tyler Lockett, 5-2 is Sony Michel, then OJ Howard, Julian Edelman, Carson Wentz, 5-6 is Cooper Kupp, Drew Brees, Cam Newton, my boy Chris Godwin, Darius Geis, Philip Lindsay, and David Montgomery. And that's our last pick in the fifth round. Now, we talked about Geis a little bit. I think I'm pretty sure I know where Derek's going, just basically injury and setbacks with that injury, not to mention Adrian Peterson is there and says he's getting 2,000 yards. So I think we'll take him at face value there. I mean, listen, we want them to be boisterous and say that they're going to do, he did it. He's going to come out and get 2,000. So listen, I can't say that he's not. So where's Geis going to fall if he gets 2,000? They also drafted a running back relatively early. And if you listen to the coach, Samaje Perine is blowing it up in camp.
He's the only one there that's healthy. He's the only guy there. So, I mean, I know a lot of people are talking Samaje Perine. I actually added him on a lot of my teams about a month ago just because he's the only healthy back right now. I mean, it's kind of very similar to different teams with the Bills right now. Singletary's getting all of the work right now. Frank Gore's injured. McCoy just showed up to because of its, you know, it's mandatory camp now. So it's like with that situation, he's the only guy.
What I'll say about Geis is the reason I'm scared about him is I love Geis as a talent. I absolutely love him. But read the tea leaves of what this team has done.
They're scared.
We could talk about. I mean, they drafted Bryce Love, I think was in the fourth.
Was it
was
fourth?
The third?
I thought it was the third, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, drafting him there, you bring back, and they brought back Adrian Peterson like super fast in the offseason, like signed him to a 2-year contract, which 2 years doesn't mean shit to me. But for this year, like what scares me about Darius Geis. Is he the next Derrick Henry this year, like a guy that we hype up, and then the bet is the guy that gets the workload? Like, I just see a lot of parallels there, man. Like, I'm not willing to take him in the top 20. I'm just not. Like, there's no way. Like, it's not just Adrian Peterson. It's Chris Thompson. It's Bryce Love if he gets healthy. And we have no clue who is going to be the dude there. Like, or even if there really is a guy. Like, Chris Thompson is going to be active as long as he has two legs that work. He'll have to be active in the pass game. So that's going to be capped. And at the end of the day, do we think that the Redskins are going to be a good offense? I don't. So then there's the limiting factor as well for Geis there. So it's not a guy that I'm going to touch with what we've seen and what we know right now in the top 24 running backs. Like, I will not touch him in the top 24.
Yeah, and I think even me having him at 28, a lot of when you're doing your rankings, isn't it sometimes you feel just like, I got to put this guy here. You're just like, you feel like you have to. You know, it's almost like I wanted to move him down, you know, a lot lower, but I almost felt like, well, he's got the talent. He's got the – possibly he's got the job. But, yeah, it just kind of – it felt – even that, having him at 28 just felt like a kind of very arbitrary, very Josh Jacobs. I got him.
I've got Adrian Peterson and Geis just buddying up at RB 36 and 37 right now.
That makes me feel way better.
I'll give you a warm hug, audio wise.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
So I know George is probably the highest on him here. Let's go through it then. So Darius Geis, Philip Lindsay.
Lindsay. It's not a three or four way backfield. It's right. A two way.
All right. Geis, and I know Derek is super happy with Montgomery.
Yeah.
But Geis or Montgomery?
You don't even I don't even have to tell you.
I'd probably go Montgomery there.
I got Montgomery 25. I wanted to put him at 21, but it was other guys that I liked over him. That's a tough range.
All right, Geis or Ingram?
I'm going Ingram.
Yeah, it's close. I'm gonna go Geis, but it's really close.
I have Geis. I don't like it.
And then the last one I'm gonna go with is Geis or Kenyon Drake.
Oh, Drake.
Geis.
Break the tie, Derek.
Where did I put him at? I'm looking at my ranks right now. I'm gonna go Drake.
Yeah, I'm pretty high on Drake.
Yeah, I mean, so I listening to how low you guys are on Geis, like all these guys should be above where you have Darius Geis. Just if you have them in the 30s, because you know we're still in the 20s picking these guys here. All right, so we went through five rounds. We're just gonna cursory go over 6 through 14, just so if anything stood out to anybody here, we can let you know. Derek, we'll start with you. What stood out to you 6 through 14, good and bad?
So there was a few different selections that stood out to me. I mean, honestly, I was kind of surprised, and maybe this is just me not buying into as much of the stink of the Giants, but Sterling Shepard making it all the way to the 9th round was a little bit surprising to me as a guy that I think that could be a top 24 wide receiver, getting selected behind, say, Will Fuller, Allen Robinson, Larry Fitzgerald, Corey Davis, and a rookie, even N'Keal Harry. So that was very surprising to me. The other thing that was kind of stood out to me was the fact that we had two rookie tight ends taken in this draft. And I mean, they were taken as the 12th and 13th tight ends off the board. At least in what I've looked at, a rookie tight end outside of Evan Ingram finishing in the past the top 15 tight end is a statistical outlier. Now, I think Fant could do that just because of what I think about Denver and their pass catching core this year. But do I see both, like, two rookie tight ends finishing in the top 12 to 13? I don't see that. So that really, especially when you look at, like, dude, Delanie Walker was taken at the end of the who's took him in the 14th, the last round. I put Walker as finishing above both those tight ends easily in redraft.
George, what'd you spot?
Are you asking me what I didn't like or what I did like?
Yeah,
or
what you did and what you didn't.
Well, I didn't like what Eric Moody did. He went zero wide receiver or zero running back. I'm not a big fan of his team. So he's deep. Obviously, his first five picks were wide receivers. Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, Stephon Diggs, Brandon Cooks, Chris Godwin. Okay, I love that. But the problem is you can only start three of those guys. You got two wide receivers and a flex. So you got two of them sitting on your bench. That's not helping you win. His first running back off the board was Tariq Cohen, Jordan Howard, Ronald Jones. Just not guys. Deion Lewis is who he took in the last round. There's no running back there outside of Tariq Cohen. I feel confident in starting even in bye weeks, heavy bye weeks as a flex. I don't want to start Jordan Howard. I have zero faith in Ronald Jones at all. And I don't want to play Deion Lewis. So he's at a big hole there. I think his team would have been significantly better had he spent – gone three wide receivers and then took two running backs. He could have ended up with a Kerryon Johnson or Marlon Mack in the fourth, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, you know, somebody that he could say, okay, this is going to be my running back one, and is somebody that would be dependable. Ended up with Tom Brady, Sam Darnold, and Joe Flacco. Not the greatest quarterbacks, but in the super flex, he's got three starters. So I guess you got to kind of like that.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what George said. And I'll piggyback on to my thoughts as far as running backs there. In that round, I mean, I like what Moody did. He has the biggest team that stood out just because that's kind of what I do in a lot of these drafts. But I don't go five wide just because you don't need to do it there unless the setting stands for it. But I do like that he picked Tariq Cohen. He probably would have liked James White if I let him fall to him. But if not, he had to get stuck with Jordan Howard, who's Jordan Howard. He's going to be okay, but that's it. Other than that, I mean, I love that the fact that he can pair these wide receivers now with some of these backs on someone that is high and possibly a Ronald Jones, and you could package Chris Godwin, Ronald Jones, and perhaps get a Kerryon. But you didn't have to – you could have took Kerryon. Yep. So I definitely agree with a lot of what George was saying there. The other things that stood out to me was Chris Carson falling so far, and Lamar Miller as well, which I can understand Lamar Miller for some people falling so far, but Chris Carson is just insane to me. I have him firmly top 24 back. I actually have him as high as RB16, so him falling that far is kind of crazy to me. They don't have another back, Mike Davis, that was taking work away from them. Yeah, they have Rashad Penny, but he's going to be taking Mike Davis' work. He's not going to be taking Chris Carson's work. They actually improved on their line, which was garbage last year, in my opinion. And also, I know it's cloudy, but seeing the pass catchers from Green Bay fall and Geronimo Allen,
yeah, baby,
falling so far, I thought that was kind of crazy. I think these both of these guys are going to be arguably a wide receiver twos. They're going to have weeks where they're high in wide receiver twos. So I think that was kind of, and a lot of that, it's early offseason. And Anthony Miller was another one for me. I'm very high on him as well. And Robert Foster with the last pick, Debro took him. I love Robert Foster. Been paying a lot of attention to Buffalo's Bills news. I think that's just kind of insane for you to get that kind of value from that late. But yeah, other than that, pretty standard stuff. It was a good draft. We saw a lot of different things. There's a lot of backs I like that went late. Justice Hill, Matt Spencer took late. I like him. The late round guys, David Moore, who Sam Lane took, Stompy. I love David Moore. I think he's going to be surprising a lot of people this year. Devin Funchess, who Draft Genius took. So, yeah, there's a lot of late round draft picks that were something to talk about. The late round draft guys, you almost want to talk about them more than the top end guys, because we know who those guys are. We know who they're going to be, where they're going to finish kind of more. These last guys are the sleepers, right? These are the sleeper range for guys. So I'm definitely liking a lot of these later round picks. But yeah, overall, great, great draft with a bunch of great guys. It was a fun one.
So I'm going to close this as far as the we talked about Eric Moody's team and we talked, he went five wide receivers. What people will tell you, what we'll tell you is go do a lot of mock drafts and test these things out. So, you know, this doesn't mean anything to anybody. This is a small, you know, this mock draft is for fun. So we could talk about it. And then tomorrow it gets wiped out and nobody remembers it. So these are the times where you test out theories and you test out the way things will go. If you go round by round and say, okay, I think Brandon Cooks is the best on the board, so I'm going to take him even though I don't have a running back yet. This is the time to do it. And that's one reason why we do stuff like Metal Mock Monday where we mock multiple times in one night and we have everybody on. so you can do things like this to figure out what your best strategy is and what you're seeing in drafts. Now, could we fix Eric Moody's team with a couple moves? Yeah, so in 4-4, after he's taken Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, and Stephon Diggs, 4-4, you take Kerryon Johnson, and now he has a stud running back. And then if you want another running back coming back, you have your choice, probably David Montgomery, right? So now you've got Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, Stephon Diggs, Kerryon Johnson, and David Montgomery, and that's a really, really solid really, really solid draft. But, you know, maybe he was banking on Carson coming back to him and he got picked early. So that's what these mock drafts are for. So you can see, okay, I can't go five wide receivers and then hope to get one of the guys later, like Chris Carson, who's being, to me, underdrafted, but, you know, you can't wait until 7-9 to get him. So guys, play around in these mocks so that you know what you want to do when it's actually time.
Yeah, and you got to know the people you're drafting with as well.
That's huge. If you do know, then yeah, that's huge. Obviously that's a little bit more difficult. If you're playing in a bunch of leagues, I will say also guys, go follow Eric Moody. He's done a lot of these zero RB type of mocks lately. You'll see a bunch of different teams. This might not be one that you like. You'll see other scenarios that played out where he got that running back that he's been. And to be honest, I don't know if this is his style or if he's doing this for research purposes, but I follow Eric, you know, played with him in a few leagues, and I think he's doing this basically off of, I mean, I like this just because this is what I usually do. I don't usually take five, but as I was saying earlier, but I think he was just trying to test it out to see how zero RB plays out this year. So yeah, if you follow him, see that there's other scenarios that might work for you. I think a lot of people are kind of scared of doing zero RB because you don't know who to kind of take. But obviously you're looking for those PPR backs in a PPR league. Otherwise, zero RB doesn't work at all if it's not in the PPR. Like, don't
look at the draft board. I would have said that he was hoping for James White to fall back to him, but you grabbed White at the 7-11. But to back to the point, doing all these mock drafts and stuff like that, like we all kind of preach, and going back to a way earlier point in this show, is that we all kind of preach, even in Superflex, wait on your quarterback. Like, even if I look at my team, like there are points in formats and stuff like that, you want to take the quarterbacks, especially when you are on the freaking turn and there's 21, 22, whatever it is, picks in until your next pick, and you're like, shit. Like that quarterback run is going to happen.
It's real.
And if you freak out and take the quarterback early over like the positional player, that wide receiver two, the running back two, the guy that you really like feel like, I feel like the sweet spot in these super flex drafts, if it's one QB, I'm not taking a quarterback usually before like the eighth, ninth round. It's just not happening. In Superflex, the sweet spot for me is between rounds 5 and 8. So I get my two running backs, two wide receivers knocked out. And depending on that, hell, I might wait until the 6th round, depending on how it falls. Like in this one, I waited till the 7th because there were positional players there that I felt like I could not pass up. And I guess all of this is to say is if you have a strategy and you are going to say, all right, I feel like I can wait. If the board is falling to you, don't jump too hard. Like, have those brass balls, have that ambition to stay with what you believe in and your draft strategy, but also be flexible when you need to. I know that sounds wishy-washy, me both talking out of both sides of my mouth, but people, when they get on the clock and there's 30 seconds and they got to make that pick, they freak out and they worry about the what if. Well, what if those quarterbacks don't go and you could have gotten another running back, two other wide receivers, and grab the guys that you wanted a round or two later, and you're like, you're sitting at the end of it staring at it like, oh shit, I wish I'd have done this. Like, stick to what you have mocked and what you believe based off of those mocks. Like, if you believe that looking forward, you can get those quarterbacks that you're still comfortable with or mix and match later, do it. Stick with your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and if we're, now that we've got that out the way, my favorite team, I don't want to say by far, but just off of all the points that we've hit on having consistent good running backs, good wide receivers, having three quarterbacks, having a solid tight end. It's going to be Deebro. I mean, I think he just did phenomenal, especially getting Kirk Cousins.
I love you, Hoops, but I
Well, so to quickly, since he's the favorite, to quickly recap Deebro's team, he has Joe Mixon, Dalvin Cook, Amari Cooper, Kenny Galladay, David Montgomery, Calvin Ridley, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo, Vance McDonald, Dante Pettis, Marcus Mariota, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Chris Thompson, and Robert
Foster. Too many guys that I love. Those are too many guys.
It's solid top to bottom. I don't see a weakness on the team. Three solid starters at running back, and multiple wide receivers that you could plug in every week. Vance McDonald, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Vance McDonald, but I'm also, once you get past, you know, Evan Ingram, to me, it's a dartboard throw on these guys. So I like Vance McDonald enough there. So Derek, unless you're going to be unhumble, who's your favorite
team? Dude, I want to say I loved my team just because I went and got my guys. Like, this is a team full of guys that I it's so many man crushes I got on this team. But I do believe that me and Hoos could have, and some of these guys around this term could have very much the same looking teams, only in the sense that we could have sniped each other back and forth in this draft. I want to say, I mean, looking at a lot of these different teams, another one I liked,
you could say it's your team, man, and we can move on. It's okay.
Dude, I really like my team, but I will also say that I gravitated toward Tyler and Hoos's teams over here at the turn, in the sense that if you look at their teams from top to bottom, like, there was a lot of value on Tyler's team. He had Russ and Dak, who I love, and following that up with the third quarterback of Andy Dalton, who is not a sexy name, but he, as a third quarterback, shoot. And you looking at Marvin Jones as your wide receiver three. Now, the only thing I'll say with his team is taking Tyreek as your wide receiver two is a lot of risk right there. But following up Marvin Jones and some other, and then he padded it with some other upside wide receivers late. I really liked his team. I really liked Hoos's team a whole lot. I felt like we kind of traded back and forth with picks and stuff. Like, him starting out with James Conner, Devontae Adams, and AJ Green was absolute nuts. And following that up with Deshaun Watson, who I think is a bank at top four quarterback and has the upside to be the number one quarterback in fantasy this year. Getting that dude in the fourth round is absolute insanity to me. So I really liked Hoos's team. Like I said, like, I feel like me and him could have traded back and forth because we kept sniping each other. Yeah. There was a lot of picks. Like, I mean, I was looking at, like, I got Amari Cooper in the third. Hell, I was looking at AJ Green and I was like, oh God. And I was looking at James Conner in the first and he grabbed it there. So I'd say probably top to bottom, those are my two favorite teams out of this draft.
And what I learned is to never, select the team next to Deebro if I'm in the same league as him. So I learned something.
All right, George, save us from this love fest. These two lovebirds kissing each other back and forth. Give me another team.
I liked Dynasty John a lot. He really solid, in my opinion, through his first seven picks. But looking at it a little bit more, he fell off tremendously at the back end of the draft, where I have to agree with Derek on Tyler's team. Tyler has a very, very solid team.
Great team.
Looking at Tyreek Hill in the eighth, literally, if he doesn't get suspended or if it's a small suspension and he stays in Kansas City, that at that value, that's a league winner. You know, I got googly eyes for Keenan Allen. That's one of my guys. Derek Geis is another one of my guys that I want on all my teams. I love the Marvin Jones that late. I think he's going way too late, way underrated. People see he got injured last year. Kenny Golladay is a very good wide receiver, but I think the key to unlocking Kenny Golladay is Marvin Jones being able to do what he does. He's got the three solid quarterbacks, as stated earlier, with Wilson, Prescott, and Dalton as his third. Top to bottom, it's a very, very solid.
All right. So that is going to wrap up our mock draft here. Before we go today, I'd like to give Derek an opportunity to give some plugs. Derek, where can people find you?
Check me out on Twitter at @dbro_ffb. I am on there probably more than anybody ever should be, although present company accepted. We are all on there. So find me on Twitter, and I have all kinds of good stuff. Lots of goodies coming this regular season for the Quant Edge. And all of my Dynasty content comes out with Fantasy Data and Gridiron Experts and the Fantasy Black Book with Joe Pisapia, Jake Seeley, Nate Hamilton. A lot of amazing people through all of that book. It just dropped and will be for the, everybody's consumption throughout the entire offseason. So, look, we're all mocking. If you want to win your draft, you better come and buy the book, head over to the Quant Edge, look at my work. I'm everywhere and all the time, man. So, yeah.
He's everywhere. You ain't never there.
Luce, where? It's the Quant Edge. It's the Quant Edge. It's the only edge you'll need.
And good people, you find me, Sleeper Wire Hoos on Twitter, Prophet Hoos on the Sleeper app. Other than that, doing Papa stuff, fantasy stuff. I'm all over the place doing life stuff aside from that, just like you are.
You can find me on Twitter at BFTGpod. You can find me on the Super at BFTGEO.
All right, and your host, Jason, you can find me at FL Dr. Milbarge on Twitter. You can find me at BFTG Dr. Mill on the Sleeper app. You can go to our website, BFTGpodcast.com. You can find all of the other SleeperWire shows at SleeperWire.com. And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that SleeperWire and Eat Sleep Fantasy is going to be at SportsCon in July in Dallas. And we are the official draft party after SportsCon at Top Golf. It's called Draft Night Out. Go to draftnightout.com for tickets. It's going to be insane. Come see us in Dallas in July.